Welcome to the Manasquan School District Board of Education Combined Committee of the Whole Meeting, a regular public Board of Education meeting for January 20th, 2021. Call to order, 48-hour notice. Opening statement pursuant to NJSA 10:4-10. Notice of this meeting has been provided by publication, the Asbury Park Press, the Co-Star, and posted in the Borough Hall of Manasquan and in the schools within the time limits prescribed by law. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is Michelle with us?
I don't see. I'm reaching out to her right now, see if she is lost.
So we'll just skip past that?
Yeah, we'll have to skip the oath of office for now.
Okay, roll call, Sandy.
Mr. Balderman?
Here.
Mrs. Passone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yep.
Mrs. Battalia? Mr. Patani?
Here.
Mr. Hobiter? Mr. Ingolia? Mr. Lucretta?
Here.
Mrs. McGarry?
Here.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Here.
Mrs. Pollock?
Here.
Mr. Serena?
Here.
We have a forum.
Mission statement. Manasquan School District empowers all students by providing a safe and healthy and inclusive environment where continual growth, perseverance, and rigorous academic standards are balanced with extensive extracurricular opportunities and rich tradition through partnership with the community. Statement to the public. Oftentimes it may appear to the members of the audience, the Board of Education takes action with very little comment, and in many cases by unanimous vote. Before a matter is placed on the agenda at a public meeting, the administration has thoroughly reviewed the matter with the superintendent of schools. If the superintendent of schools is satisfied that the matter is ready to be presented to the Board of Education, it is then placed on the agenda at the next combined committee of the whole regular board meeting. The members of the board work with the administration and the superintendent of schools to assure that they fully understand the matter. After discussion during the committee of the whole portion of the meeting, the matter is focused on during the regular public board meeting agenda and presented to the Board of Education for a vote. Acceptance of minutes. Recommend the acceptance of and approval of the minutes of the combined committee of the whole and regular public meeting and closed executive session of December 15th, 2020 and a reorganization meeting of January 7th, 2021. Executive session minutes will be withheld from disclosure until such time as a reason for discussing and acting on a matter in closed executive session no longer exists. Do we have a motion to accept the minutes?
Yeah.
Mr. Serena, second Mr. Lucretta.
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Passone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Patani?
Yes.
Mr. Lucretta?
Yes.
Mrs. McGarry?
I should abstain from December, but yes, to January 7th.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
Carrie?
There is no student board representative report, and there are no presentations for this month, so we'll move on to the principal reports. Mrs. Graziano? Mm-hmm.
Well, before you do, I just want to thank my administrators, especially my building principals, for demonstrating strong stewardship during this COVID crisis. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that our elementary school is here on a daily basis. And I'm very proud of the fact that our high school is here every other day. And I frequently get emails from both sides, from parents who say, you know, Frank, why can't we be in every day? And then we talk about the science. And then from parents who say, you know, I'm really concerned about being in school so much, and we talk about the science. But you make people feel safe and secure, and you're following directive that, you know how important it is for me and this Board of Education to be in school, because that's where children need to be, and in a safe and secure environment. So I want to thank you for that, and I want to thank you for being here this evening. I truly appreciate it. And Mrs. Graziano from the lower elementary school, pre-K to 4.
First of all, in regards to transitioning, Mrs. Minetta and I have been working very closely, as you know, with Dr. Cajun in regards to slowly, when we feel comfortable and we feel that it's safe, to transition some of our children back to certain classes to bring us to a little more sense of normalcy as much as we possibly can. And in the primary grades, two of the most recent transitions that we have made that are going beautifully, and our children are so happy. Our kindergarten students, who were basically confined to their classrooms because we kept the cohorts together and they did not travel anywhere, they just started, when we got back after vacation, they started to eat in the cafeteria. And they are definitely so excited, and it is a very big deal to them, and it is going very well. Still very safely done. Our paraprofessionals and teachers on duty are doing a wonderful job keeping the cohorts separated and 6 feet apart, you know, distanced appropriately. So I just wanted to share with you that that has been going very well. And just recently, the next opportunity that we had, and I have to thank Dr. Crawley and Matt Hudson and our incredible custodial staff and grounds crew for helping with moving furniture from our music suite, because we were able to transition our classes back to music in the music suite. And for the primary grades in particular, it has been wonderful to see, because yes, they have a little more opportunity to leave their classroom, stay with their cohorts, but going into the music suite, our primary grade teacher, Mrs. Gordon, can do so much more with them that she can't do when she was on a cart in the classroom. We have the open space, we did not put all the furniture back, so she's able to do dance activities and movement activities around the open area that, once again, you can't do in a small classroom area with all the desks. So it's been wonderful to see that take place, and once again, the children are really enjoying it. Next, we're going to be talking about the third marking period, possibly bringing some of just the primary grade classes back, kindergarten, first grade, to the library, not to exchange books. We're nowhere near ready for that yet, but sitting on the floor 6 feet apart just to share a story with our media specialists. So we're just looking at different opportunities to give them a little more sense of normalcy. So those are wonderful steps.
And everything, Colleen, every class is in cohorts.
Absolutely.
They're cohorts together at that age level.
Yes.
Which is fine. Good.
Language arts, I just wanted to give you an update on once again, because of being remote in the spring. I know all of you, Mrs. Manette and I, have spoke to you several times about the emphasis we're placing on assessment and tracking our students' progress to try to fill in the gaps that maybe with certain students. And right now we are working on our next round of individual running records, so we will have a new score, a new running record, which is part of our guided reading program for all of our students up through grade 4. So that's taking place right now. The teachers are doing an incredible job, once again, following safety protocols to be able to get a new running record, a new score on each of the individual children.
Could you explain what a running record is? Because I know how it's a powerful tool for literacy, and in my last district, we really made great advancements with children going from one reading one reading level to the next. So could you just explain it for those who don't know what a running record is?
We use a program, we use a variety of programs as part of our balanced literacy program, but we use Fontes and Cornell for our guided reading program. But it's a leveled program. We use leveled readers, and the running records that I was speaking about, they are individual assessments that the teacher does one-on-one with the student, in which the student has a book in front of them at their particular level, and they read it, and the teacher is listening carefully how they're pronouncing words, if they're able to comprehend, and it's, once again, it's an individual one-on-one assessment. And the teachers are able to track the levels. The children move up levels throughout the school year, and we have goals for each grade level, X amount of levels that we want to see them progress through the school year.
And to really celebrate the level as the child goes from one reading level to the next, so it really makes that child feel good. And it really gives them the enthusiasm to really dig down into that and learn those words and develop that reading skill. It really does help. And it's something we say a lot of times when we give presentations, some jargon that we use in education. So, we know what a running record is, but I didn't know if you did. And it is powerful, so I wanted you to hear that. Good.
And it's also fun for the children. They don't really see it as an assessment. It's a special one-on-one time with their teacher. So it's a wonderful assessment to be able to give. And lastly, just another update on our new math program, Ready Math. We are getting ready, it's unbelievable to think that February is right around the corner, but we're getting ready to give our next diagnostic online assessment through iReady. We'll be doing that at the beginning of February, and then gathering our data and analyzing. This one is going to be extremely important to us because it will give us the growth from the beginning of the school year until now. and we're looking forward to that data.
Thank you.
Jesse, if you could just move the slide?
Sandy.
Oh, Sandy. I just wanted to take a minute tonight to, each month we've been highlighting a certain teacher that we wanted to show our appreciation for their hard work. Well, I spread that wealth a little bit today, and I wanted to take the time, actually on both Mrs. Mehta and my, both of us, we wanted to recognize all four of our full-time virtual teachers. These four teachers, let me start with Mrs. Kaylee Sullivan, who teaches our full-time virtual students in grades K and 1. Mrs. Kristen Walsh, she teaches our second and third grade classes. Teresa Rickey, fourth and fifth grade, and Kim Ward, 6th, 7th, and 8th. And we really wanted to take the time to show our appreciation and thank them for the incredible work that they have done this year. Because they left their program, they left their teaching position that they had done for many years, and they took on an awesome responsibility because they had to learn grade levels that they had not taught before. They had to learn the curriculum and subject areas that they hadn't taught before. So it was a huge learning curve for them, and they jumped into it willingly and have done an incredible job. And the technology was different from what we did in the spring when we did remote learning, because now it is a full-time program with children, the rest of the children in school. So they had to work on correlating the program with the grade level teachers, and the technology that we're seeing them doing with their students has just been amazing to watch. And the children are thriving, who have chosen, you know, the parents have selected the full-time remote option, and we're just very pleased with the children's progress and absolutely amazed at the work that the four of those teachers are doing. So I just wanted to, both of us wanted to say thank you to them and let all of you know how much we appreciate what they're doing.
We've made so many gains in the virtual school. That's something I think the board has to start to look at, even when we're back in September full time. I think the virtual school is something that we might have to offer again to those children who are hesitant to come back on a full-time basis and they can go into the virtual school. Again, it's for discussion. It's something for you to think about. I think the seed has been planted tonight. And in committee of a whole, as we move towards the spring, we'll talk about this and see what your feelings are. I think it will be something that would benefit us and the school district, at least for a year or two, creating a strong virtual school, because our teachers, through the professional development they're getting from Mr. Coppola and from their practices, I think they're starting to, they're not masters yet, but they're starting to get better at the craft of being on the virtual instruction with the virtual school. I'm not talking about students that are home because they have to quarantine. I'm talking about those who have opted to go into the virtual school. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mrs. Mehta.
Good evening, everyone. So one of the things that I wanted to speak to you about tonight is the fact that, you know, at our, when our middle school level, our grades 5 through 8 students, things have felt very normal for a lot of this year. We're here, we're in school every day, academics are progressing, we had midterms coming that are relatively normal. We did shorten the midterms just a bit so they could fit within the 80-minute class period blocks that they have for math and for language arts to avoid mixing any cohorts of kids. And to make them just a little bit more applicable for the skills that they've been working on this year with some of those learning gaps and narrowing that process. So along with the very normal sense of academic progress that we've been making, we're also recognizing that our students are in the midst of a somewhat abnormal year. It continues to be abnormal in our surroundings. So we've been really focusing in some of our staff development on social emotional learning with our students, and that's because we have to acknowledge the experiences that our children are having even as we're trying to pursue that sense of normalcy. So social emotional learning focuses in these middle grades on a couple of different competencies: self-management, self-awareness, social awareness, responsible decision-making, and then also relationship skills. So when we talk to our teachers about incorporating strategies into their classroom, what we're talking about is giving kids the opportunity to learn some of these things really explicitly through some specific lessons, and then also embedding them into the work that they're doing with kids every day. So our latest round of staff development focused on the balancing of predictable routines while also mixing it up with some more engaging and unique experiences. Our brains and kids' brains need both new experiences and those that are predictable so they can feel safe and secure and also feel engaged and excited about their learning process. We also talked about really acknowledging the stressors that both kids and adults may have, right, and bringing those conversations in so that we're saying, it's okay, we accept and we acknowledge the feelings that we're having, how can we best and most productively move forward? And then we also talked about three key strategies that we can use all the time in our classrooms. Creating inclusive, welcoming strategies that we use to get everybody on board at the start of the class, using some different engagement tools in the classroom, and then also ending each day, each period, with an optimistic closure, they call it. And that's really an opportunity to reflect on learning, to come together as a learning community, to set goals. And all of those things are really important to the adolescent brain and also really important for a conducive learning environment. So that's been really exciting work to do with teachers. They're ready and excited to talk about that right now because they know that that's what kids need. So while we're focusing on those things, we've also been thinking about our overall student experience. You know, winter sports have started at MES, although it looks different. We do not have interscholastic play at the moment for basketball for girls and boys, but we are having some really great basketball practice and activities going on. So the kids are really excited about that. The coaches are really excited about that. And that has felt really, really good. At the same time that we're focusing on sports, we want to make sure that our kids who are more arts-minded have some opportunities too. So we talked about safely bringing back band and chorus to an in-person model in the morning. So with the opening of the music suite, we've really been able to safely spread kids out, start bringing them in small groups and warming up to a larger group. And the kids are excited, our teachers are excited. It's that one extra step towards feeling like, okay, these activities have not been taken away, they're still here, we can engage with each other in them. So it's been really, really nice and exciting to work with the teachers and the kids on bringing some of those bits and pieces back into their day.
And to that point, Megan and I had a discussion today about this, and please understand that I'm very cautious about COVID-19, and I'm very concerned about it. But again, I believe that if we follow the protocols that we have in district, we're proven that we can be successful and we can be here. Even the bringing the music and the band back together, they're not co-ordered, as our other places are in the school district. However, the temperatures will be checked, the symptoms will be checked at the door, and as well as they'll be 6 feet apart when they're in a classroom, and they'll keep their social distance. We're having athletic events in the high school. For us to say that we're going to cancel the athletic season in the elementary school, I thought it would be a disservice to the students. Even though the league itself has been postponed, we're still having sort of intramurals. The students are participating against each other, and they're actively engaged. Again, we still check our students for symptoms. We check our students for temperatures before they go into the gym. So it's something that we want to continue to move forward to give our children a sense of normalcy, do everything we can for them. But please understand that I'm well aware of what's going on around us, and we keep our finger on the pulse of science on a daily basis. So,
it's an ongoing process of building normalcy and acknowledging that these are abnormal times that we're in. We're taking all the precautions to make sure that our staff and our students are staying safe while we're giving them these new opportunities.
Thank you.
And so tonight, I actually have the pleasure of sharing with you two staff members, and it's because they are a true, true dynamic duo. So tonight, I have the pleasure of talking to you about Taylor Ames and Pam Kelly. They're here. Can you guys make a comment? Taylor Ames and Pam Kelly are here tonight together because they are an in-class resource pair. They teach as a duo of a general education teacher and a special education teacher. And this is a really special opportunity in a classroom to have two true professionals who are working together to support every learner in that classroom. And Taylor Ames and Pam Kelly are people who do just that. They are each separately very, very impressive as educators, but when you put the two of them together, it's like their superpowers get ignited, and you can see in their classroom that they're truly engaging all of their learners, that they're providing two different sets of skills and strategies to help kids learn things in different ways. And they really have a sense of co-teaching and mutual support that is beautiful to watch. So you seriously, when you go into their classroom, you watch them both, they can bounce ideas off of each other. They're both talking to kids, look at them both, right, as those teachers in the classroom. They work together to do their planning, and when they do their lessons, those lessons are coming from the heart and mind of both teachers. And what's really the most impressive thing is that because there are two of them in the room, the kids in that room know that there's two people that they can go to, there's multiple layers of support, and there are all these different strategies for kids to be successful. Taylor and Pam are special because they know that kids need different things, and they also take a look at the kids in front of them and say, okay, what's happening today? So when they look at the kids in front of them, they say, all right, they're a little bit burnt, they'll stop, they'll do something fun and exciting to get everybody re-energized and recharged. On Fridays, the class, you know, is in the room for kind of a long time, so they do something called Fun Fridays, where they'll do some arts and crafts. You can see on the bottom right there, they did a little snow hat, you know, activity with the kids, you know, because these are the things that kids will remember and look forward to about school. It's not always all about the learning, it's about the learning and the environment, and so I'm excited to share with you tonight that Taylor Ames and Pam Kelly are two people who really embody that spirit at MES.
Mrs. Ames and Mrs. Kelly, I just want to say thank you. This means a lot to me, more than you probably even know, on a trying day. I mean, this is a highlight for me to see exactly what you've done with your focus and fidelity for the children. And I know that I've been accused of having a hollow thank you now and then, but I truly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for your hard work, your due diligence, and tonight's presentation means a lot to me. Thank you very much. Right. Okay. Mr. Goodall could not be with us tonight. He had to take a sick day today. So he did give his presentation to our Director of School Counseling Services, Mrs. Kenny.
Good evening, Kenny, everyone.
If you could now be just like Mr. Goodall, I would appreciate
not
that.
Not to be confused with Mr. Goodall. For the last couple of weeks, we've been really busy in the high school. We have successfully implemented our ninth grade drop-in tutoring program. Over the course of just this week, we've had 26 students that have taken advantage of this opportunity. We are excited because I know in the past meeting we spoke about hoping to open it up to 10th through 12th graders. We are going to be able to do that beginning the week of January 25th. So this coming Monday, we will be offering the drop-in tutoring program to students in all grades. Math teachers, Mr. Catherine Hara, Chris Buss, Mr. Petriella in chemistry, Ms. Buckley in physics. In world language, we're going to have Ms. Virock. English, Ms. Testa. And social studies, we're going to have Mr. Fagan. We are also going to have a drop-in testing center with Mr. Lomas, who will be used in lieu of, you know, class makeup. So for example, if a student needs to make up a test, make up, you know, some kind of work, and they're not able to do it during the day, they'll have that opportunity to do it, you know, at that time period. In addition, we are starting our mid-year assessments. We have received, you know, the counselors, the teachers, you know, the administrators, we have received some very good positive feedback about these assessments and the setup of them in terms of how they're going to roll out in each of the classes. I think that the students are feeling, I think, a little bit less nervous about the whole aspect of the assessments, but also, you know, they're also doing very well and they're progressing along. We would like to congratulate Mr. Jim Fagan, who our social studies teacher. He was named Teacher of the Year by the New Jersey Vietnam Veterans Memorial Foundation. So, you know, those of you who don't know Mr. Fagan, he is one of our social studies teachers who teaches now in our Law and Public Safety Academy. And so this is a great honor. And additionally, our high school staff spotlight this month is a new teacher, fairly new, 2 years here with us in the high school, Mr. Ryan Critelli. Mr. Critelli graduated from Long Branch High School and then also went on to college and graduated in from George Washington University. He is one of our history teachers who joined us about 2 years ago, and he's received wonderful feedback, made some really great connections with our students. So I believe Mr. Goodall had sent a little video of him.
This is Ryan Critelli, social studies teacher over at the high school. Today I just want to show you two ways we can reach our students using technology, whether in a hybrid or the fully virtual model. The first is Edpuzzle, which allows us to edit and share videos with our students and manage our classroom. And the second is just the announcements functionality on Canvas. So first, looking at Edpuzzle, as you can see, it has a large database of all different types of videos. These are trending in history and social studies. These are trending in New Jersey. I can search up here for some videos, and I can manage my classroom down here. I can see my class members, my assignments. I have my classes that I teach on the left, who's submitting, who's answering, who's doing that kind of thing. And one of the really cool things that Edpuzzle allows us to do is that you can actually edit your own videos, and you can make your own videos. And once I realized I could do that, all bets are off, because I want other people's videos that, you know, I want to do my own videos. And really get to talk to the kids and get to kind of explain what my lessons are about a little bit further. So this allows me to kind of talk to students a little bit, to ask questions. I can, you know, if I need to do some type of direct instruction with notes or anything like that, I can give that to students at home. Because one of the things we realize in this environment is that students are here. We have them in the classroom. It's so valuable, such precious time. And for me to say, all right, now that we're finally here, you know, take out your notes, I'm gonna lecture for 20 minutes. That would be outrageous, right? So when we're here, let's debate, let's argue about history, let's look at sources, let's do something real. So I don't want to do this in the classroom, so I can give this to students at home, they can watch at home, they can do it at their own pace. I can give them that direct instruction, as you can see in the video about civil rights, and I can ask questions as well as we go. This is a little light question, but sometimes you gotta check in as well on students. You know, how's everybody holding up? I miss you guys. And they'll reply, I miss you too, Mr. Tilly, you know, we're doing okay. Things like that, so important. And then as we go through, I can ask as many questions as I want. This one's a little bit more hard-hitting about all delivered speed with Brown versus Board of Education, and students would have to answer that question. And basically that allows me to check up for understanding that students watched the video, they understood what they were learning, and now they're giving that to me in the form of an answer to this question. So important to deliver that instruction, but once again, it allows me to do it while they're at home, and then when we're in the classroom, we can actually do some real historical concepts and really get after it. The second one is just the announcements functionality on Canvas, which is such a good way to just check in on students and just see how they're doing, or keep them updated, you know, test Monday, rough drafting today, that kind of thing. But I can also reach out and get them a little bit excited about history, or just talk to them. This is a promotional picture I made for one of my Edpuzzles dropped, you know, March 18th, 2020. And, you know, a silly little picture like this, it gets students so excited for this Edpuzzle. You know, students are emailing me. I'm getting flooded with emails on March 18th. Like, hey, Mr. Tilly, you said it was going to drop today, but there's no video up. What's going on? You're late, pal. And, you know, when students are emailing you to say, where is our history video? And we want to watch the history video. That's amazing, right? That's what this is all about. So, you know, little things like that. I try to do a blog post on Sunday nights. These are some of my past crits corners, I call them. So I'll just kind of write a little passage, tell them what's going on in my week. I'll tell them kind of some things I've done in the past or lessons I've learned and that kind of thing. And, you know, you'd be surprised, students are coming into class on Monday mornings and they're saying, I read Crits Corner yesterday. That was nuts. Or like, why'd you do that? Or things like, parents are emailing me. They're like, hey, what's your fellow Crits Corner? Like, what's, oh my God. And, you know, so that is really something, just to have that kind of, you know, be able to talk to the students in that way as well, in addition to history. And if there's anybody whose children I don't teach, you know, and you want access to Kids Corner, just send me an email. We can work something out. But those are just two ways we can, you know, further reach our students who we might not see every day. One is just checking in on them using the announcements feature on Canvas, and the next is actually delivering that instruction in a virtual environment, whether it be Edpuzzle or any other thing. So those are two ways I use. I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you very much.
So again, I think it's just another example of how all of our teachers in the district are really using technology and kind of learning as they go, and really how to keep students engaged during this time. So thank you.
Leslie, thank you. Any questions from the board about our presentations this evening? One of the things that I think this highlights is the fact that for 7 years, we've opened board meetings with presentations of Students of the Month and Teachers of the Month. I'm hoping to be able to move back to that. We'll have a discussion about that when you feel comfortable for doing that. I would hope maybe sometime in February or March, as we see the vaccines coming out, that we can maybe move back to that. But we'll talk about it. Because I do feel we have a lot of deserving staff and students that would like to compliment, especially that great award that Jim got as Teacher of the Year from that organization. So I'd like you to start thinking about that. Thank you, guys. Good. Are you guys good? Get up. You don't have to sit here all night. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you
very much.
Do Do we want to go back to the oath of office?
Yeah, we can do that now if it's a good time, Chief.
Welcome, Michelle. Do you pronounce your last name Cartaya?
Cartaya.
Cartaya, okay.
Hi, Ms. Cartaya. This is Pete Crawley. I'm the board secretary. I'm going to be reading the oath of office I sent you, if you're ready.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, if you could raise your right hand. I trust you. I, state your name.
I, Michelle Cartaya.
Do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of New Jersey.
Do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of New Jersey.
And that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same and to the governments established in the United States and this state.
And that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same and to the governments established in the United States and this state.
Under the authority of the people, so help me God.
Under the authority of the people, so help me God.
I state your name.
I, Michelle Cartaya.
Do solemnly swear that I possess the qualifications prescribed by law for the office of member of a Board of Education.
Do solemnly swear that I possess the qualifications prescribed by law for the office of member of the Board of Education.
Am not disqualified as a voter pursuant to RS 1941. Am not disqualified due to conviction of a crime or offense listed in NJSA 18A-12-1.
I'm not disqualified as a voter pursuant to 19:4-1. I'm not disqualified due to the conviction of a crime or offense listed in 18A:12-1.
And that I will faithfully, impartially, and justly perform all the duties of that office according to the best of my ability, so help me God.
And that I will faithfully, impartially, and justly perform all the duties of that office according to the best of my ability, so help me God.
Thank you, Michelle. Welcome aboard.
Welcome.
Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Sorry, I couldn't make it today.
Not a problem. So that'll bring us to our first public forum on agenda items. Time may be allotted for public comment at this meeting. Each speaker may be allotted a limited time when recognized by the presiding officer. In the event that the public comment portion may exceed 45 minutes, the presiding officer may limit each statement made by a participant to 3 to 5 minutes in duration, which we will impose that limit tonight. Individuals wishing to address the board shall be recognized by the presiding officer and shall give their names, addresses, and the group, if any, they represent. Although the board encourages public participation, we reserve the right through the presiding officer to terminate remarks to and or by any individual not keeping with the conduct of a proper and efficient meeting. During the public participation portion of this meeting, the board will not respond to questions from the public involving employment, appointment, termination of employment, negotiations, terms and conditions of employment, evaluation of the performance of, promotion or disciplining of any specific or prospective or current employee. This public forum is limited to comment on items included in this agenda only. Would anyone like to be heard? Seeing no one, we'll move on to our second public forum for items either on the agenda or any other items not on the agenda. Does anyone like to be heard? Seeing no one, we'll close public forum and we'll move on to our discussion items. I'll turn it over to Dr. Cajun.
Thank you. For our discussion items this evening, first, regarding education, curriculum, and technology, we have our school calendar for next year. And are there any questions on the school calendar? I'd like to bring to the board's attention that we'll start with the faculty meeting and staff in service on February 2nd, and with a high school freshman orientation and staff in service this year on September 7th. We felt it was important as we're starting the new school year with everybody in session again this year after our COVID experience that we do something different for the freshmen. And the freshmen will go through their schedule culminating in lunch, them all having lunch together, because of all the different sending districts come together, we thought it would be a nice opportunity for them to start to meet each other in the cafeteria. And Leslie, if you want to say something about that, because I know you are a big proponent of this, and I want to thank you for this creative idea.
So, yeah, thank you. This has been one of the things that I think is really beneficial, especially more so than ever after this year. Oftentimes, to students, especially coming from different locations, different schools, you know, we do freshmen for a day. We do, you know, a lot of opportunities for them to be in the building. But oftentimes, you know, the first time that they walk through the building with their schedule is the first day of school with everybody else. And coming in as freshmen, you know, they're not just with other freshmen. So we thought that it would be very beneficial to bring in all of our freshmen for that day, so that they walk in the building as the only class, you know, in the building that day. They walk through each of their classes. They learn how to navigate through the building. They actually meet their teacher face to face. You know, get to go to their locker, see what their activities, and really kind of have an idea and have that footprint laid out for them the next day when they go to school with the rest of the student population. So I think it'll just be another way for our students who are new to the building to feel acclimated. And for those students who, after their half-day experience, you know, need additional supports or have some questions, you know, the counselors will be available to meet with them right at that moment. So I'm excited about it. I think it'll be a really good opportunity.
And to further explain exactly what this day is like, it's a high school freshman orientation, so of course those freshman teachers will be in those classes. The rest of the staff will be in staffing services on both sides of the street. So it will just be the freshman teachers themselves that will be in the morning with those classes going from, I would believe, like it's an E-day schedule?
Yes. Yep, so they'll go through each of
their
schedule.
And then culminating with lunch for all the freshmen and those teachers. And then in the afternoon, those teachers will have the opportunity to work in their classrooms. Any questions about this at all? Good. Thanks. And then the calendar, I believe, as you can see, is pretty much the same. Notice the graduation dates, rain or shine, June 21st. We have done that for the last couple years. And then elementary school, June 20th. So that's the calendar. Basically, it's...
Dr. Cage?
Yes. I knew there was a question.
Yeah. Maybe I should ask when you asked the first time. With the first day that the teachers come in, I always thought it was a good idea to have it after Labor Day. And it's too late now for next year, but can we look at that in the future? I mean, to bring them in one day before and then have Labor Day weekend, I know it would skew the calendar by a day, but to me, the summer doesn't end until Labor Day Monday. And I wouldn't be in favor of bringing them back before Labor Day. That's just me.
To that point, with the discussion with the association themselves, they felt more comfortable with that coming back and having that time to get that started and have their, there's certain processes and procedures that I think they think are mundane, I think are important, that we go through on that day and like to have them out of the way.
If the teacher association doesn't mind coming back before Labor Day, you don't have to explain it further to me. I thought I was
okay.
Doing something nice for them.
All right. Every calendar, I meet with the teachers association first and we go over it. And not that they have to approve it, so they can see what we're doing. And like everything else we do here, we collaborate, and I take suggestions, and then I'll bring them to you. And this was the final product that we came out with. So they do know about this, and they said fine.
All right.
And as you notice, the February recess is still in there. If you go back 7 years ago, and we tried to take it out so we could end earlier, but that'll never happen again. 3-1, I lost that one. But that's okay. No, we don't. We'll not do that again. Not this guy. We went out for a survey. We lost 3-1, and I think that said it all for the community. They like to use that day for different things. And next year, hopefully, it'll be a time everybody can get away. We'll see. Personnel will be discussed in executive session. We do have policies, 6153, the tuition program policy for non-residents, non-sending district regular education students, is the second reading this evening. Are there any questions about that particular policy? I believe we have discussed that in length, so I don't see the need for any. But if there is, that's good, Dr. Crawley, because if there was, I was going to turn it over to you to talk about it. Good? Thank you. Now, moving right along, I'd like to introduce Dr. Crowley, a man who needs no introduction, to talk about the finance budget of 21-22.
Thank you, Dr. Kazian.
You're welcome.
Just a quick update on the budget and the process and where we're at in it. I am in receipt of every department's budget, so that's what you would expect. That's the curriculum department, the guidance department, special ed, the buildings. Every head of department submits their budget that they've built to me for review. It's reviewed with myself, Dr. Kazian, you know, pertinent department heads, Mr. Coppola if it's a curriculum-related issue, Ms. Kenny if it's a special ed or guidance-related issue. And we comb through and prioritize that and get those down to a point where we can, you know, meet a budget within the confines we're met with. Those will be returned to the departments next week. I'll be reaching out to all the heads to get them back to them, and then they can start their planning for next year with a more, you know, formal number in mind. In terms of the board level, what we'll do over the next month is start to talk about, and we have already talked about priorities and things in our president and vice president meetings. Towards the end of February, early March, as we've done in years past, we'll meet with the finance committee. Gene will reach out to you at some point soon to get names for that committee. We'll meet and we'll go over the budget in detail. At that point, it's almost finalized, other than, you know, the input from you guys and what needs to be changed. So we'll go over it. We'll take any input or feedback, and then we'll move forward with formal adoption in the months of March and April. So that's where we're at time frame wise. Are there any questions regarding the process or the budget as it stands?
To that point, as an organization, we're always evolving. So it means there are new programs that we're always being asked to put into effect. So at this particular time, every budget season, we do an audit of our organization to see exactly what is working, what is necessary, where our needs are, and how we're going to move forward with that. But with a school population, as we'll find out when I go into the superintendent's report, of 1,538 with 1,002 in high school, which I'm very happy we went from 938 to 1,000. That's great. And the need for new positions, we have to really take a close look at exactly what we do and how we do it. And it's not an over influx of students, so I don't see the need because of population. The positions that we'll be focusing on will be programmatic positions. But if you add programs, other programs have to go away if they're not being serviced properly. So that's why we take an audit every year of exactly what we're doing, so we spend our money correctly and with a financial focus, financial feasibility. So we'll be doing that now as we take a look at the budget and moving forward. Any questions about that at all?
No question or comment. Anyone who's interested in being in the budget committee, finance committee, just send me an email. We'll put that together now.
All right, thanks. Next on my points to talk about is the cafetorium floor. This came up at last meeting or the December committee of the whole meeting, I think was the last time we discussed it. Just for background, for those of you who maybe weren't here, Ann and Michelle, the cafetorium floor when it was poured was the type of floor that prior to its pouring had presented issues with mercury being present in schools and was the cause for, you know, wide-scale remediation of those types of floors in school districts all around the country, the state and country. I guess approximately, you might have to fill us in, July 2019, it was noticed there was a crack in the floor that had,
correct,
you know, due to some settlement, a crack had been presented in the floor. And at the time, our environmental consultant, you know, thought, you know, those types of floors have had mercury in them. I think maybe we should test it and just see, which we certainly took his advice. And did test them. A little bit about mercury and kind of how the testing works. Mercury is present in the environment. It's present in this room right now at some level. It's present across the street at some level. It's present anywhere. It's not realistic in our world today to expect mercury levels to be at zero. It's present in electronics and you know, certain floors and things like that. So to say there's mercury present is not necessarily to say anyone's in danger. It's just to say you are kind of alive and existing in New Jersey at the time. When they test ambient mercury levels. So when we did get the floor tested, the cafetorium tested, they test outside of the gym. They test to try to kind of establish a baseline of mercury level for the environment and the area. When that was done, the mercury level you would expect if nothing was present or if nothing was being introduced to it is 0.02 micrograms
per meter cubed. For context, the Department of Health guideline for what is a dangerous level is 0.8. So walking around outside in Manasquan, we're 40 times below what would be considered a dangerous level. When I say a dangerous level, for context, that means what's dangerous for a preschool student to be in the presence of. So the most, you know, vulnerable developing brain, if in the presence of 0.8, would possibly be dangerous from side effects of mercury. So you're walking around the streets of Manasquan, we're at 40 times below what that dangerous level is. When the gym was tested, the cafetorium across the street was tested, it's tested in all different areas, not just at the crack. Mercury was a little bit higher in the gym than 0.02. So the conclusion that our environmental consultant reached was, yeah, you know, it is higher than 0.02, which is what I would expect it to be if there was no gym floor. So the gym floor is presenting some level of mercury, or introducing some level of mercury into the environment under what you would expect in ambient conditions. The highest reading we got over there in any portion of the gym was a 0.1. So that's 8 times below what would be a dangerous level for a preschool student. And we got measurements as low as 0.00, which is obviously 0.00. There's no mercury present. To speak to that, and it's contradiction to my previous statement that mercury exists, he used a Jerome J505 mercury vapor analyzer. If you're unfamiliar with that instrument, it is able to read mercury vapor concentrations as low as 0.05 micrograms per cubic meter. So when he's reporting things below 0.05, his meter, his instrument, is not even, you know, it's almost arbitrary. It's not sensitive enough to even read below that. So if it's below 0.05, it's anywhere from 0 to 0.05. You can't really be sure. All that being said, you know, like I mentioned before, there are some levels that are above 0.02. There are levels as high as 0.1, which is higher than his instrument could read, so we can assume that was accurate in identifying mercury being present. So in consultation with him, our course of action is going to be to encapsulate that floor with a 1.5 millimeter coat, a wear coat, they call it. It's basically pouring over the existing floor a new, very similar, but more modern chemical that does not have mercury in it to obviously, you know, to have the effect of keeping the mercury that is in the floor under that level. I do want to caution, it probably will not be zero. It will probably never be zero, but it will certainly get it down to a level where the gym, the floor itself that's existing over there, is no longer introducing it into the atmosphere. Over time, years potentially, the mercury that's in that floor could contaminate the wear coat we put in and eventually get it back to the levels it's at now, which is, as I mentioned, already not an unsafe situation to be in, but, you know, potentially higher than what is ambient. So we can continue, we'll talk to our environmental consultant once that's poured and establish a, you know, testing regimen that's appropriate given the new levels. When we started testing this, we were testing it every twice a year. We're now down to once a year because we kind of established that it wasn't that dangerous. My expectation would be it would be once every several years once we do the initial testing after the wear coat is poured and we see that the levels are down to somewhere where we're comfortable with. So that's the current situation. All that lead up was to emphasize that no one has been in danger. There is no danger with the mercury level as it's at. However, you know, out of an abundance of caution, we are going to take action to try to get it as low as we can. Are there any questions about that project or the mercury across the street? Yeah, Alexis.
Were there other options that you looked at, or are there other suggestions other than the airport?
Yeah, I mean, the only other suggestion really, there's three options. Really do nothing, because it doesn't rise to the level where it would be mandated to do anything. Two would be pour the thin wear coat, which again should get it to where the ambient level is, at least in the short term, and short term meaning years, which is what we're currently considering going with. The third would be a full-scale abatement. The problem with that, and as described by our environmental consultant, is A, the cost of it, A and only A, the cost of it. It would be about $150,000 to abate per his quote, plus the addition of a new floor. The problem with abating it low is then you have to measure it. The mercury is not only coming up, it's also going down. So the result of it, a full-scale floor abatement, could be mercury is now in the foundation. Now we have to abate the foundation if we want to get it, you know, down to zero. And then you're turning this into a, you know, potentially $500,000, million-dollar project that's spiraling out of control when, really, you know, it's probably a little overkill given the amount of mercury that's present. So those are the three options. Do nothing, the wear coat, and maybe every 5-10 years, put a new wear coat on just to keep it, you know, as new, or a full-scale abatement.
And Alexis, to tell you the truth, my first focus was, let's pull it up. Because I originally thought that, and I'll ask Dr. Crowley this question, what was the percentage coming out of the crack in the floor? Wasn't it 0.09?
He measured the crack in two different locations. He measured it on the hall side and the exterior side. He measured it three times a day, morning, midday, and afternoon. So I'll just go through them. In the morning on the hall side, it was 0.09. On the exterior side, it was 0.01. So again, not even detectable by his.
So my point is that I had thought when it was originally investigated, and this is what Raleigh told me, that, oh, Frank, it's the crack in the floor that the mercury's coming out of. So here I'm thinking that the floor is good, it's the crack that's letting mercury gas emit and come up, and therefore it's contaminating, so we have to keep the HVAC on, which we do, and so it gets the levels down. But that's not the case. It's coming from the product itself because of what's coated on the top of the floor. So my first inclination was, let's rip that floor up, let's wait and develop a budget where we can then put a parquet basketball court down on there, and then we could have a wooden floor. However, he then showed me school districts that felt that that was the way to go. And as they kept digging, they found out that from the floor, the mercury had gone down into the soil. So they had to dig underneath the foundation, and they had to keep digging, so that project then escalated to be in the millions. So I said to myself, well, that's not really the way to go. What would be the best? And we left it up to the professionals, our environmentalists, who said, do this, which we will. So, questions? And that we're planning on doing that project?
In the coming months. It's gonna take 2 weeks of the cafetorium to be shut down, so we're gonna have to coordinate with Ms. Mineta to find a appropriate time to do that.
Did I miss the cost?
And the cost of the project, is?
$37,000.
$37,000. It went from $111,000 to $37,000. So we felt we'd act on it right away with the monies in this year's budget.
And how much have we already spent on this as far as the testing and what we've done to today?
Yeah, we spent upwards. I just pulled those POs. We spent about $10,000 to $15,000 on it over the last year and a half. So this will, you know, pay for itself in
What is it, about $6,000 a test?
Per test, yeah. And again, it's you know, this is a pretty, it's a solution that's been used in other schools and districts. Like I said, the floors were pretty popular back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Our floor, we're lucky, was on kind of the tail end of them using that curing chemical that contained mercury, and that's why our levels are so low. In a number of schools, it was, you know, astronomical, and they had to take immediate and pretty extensive action. So, you know, we're happy that our kids certainly were never in danger over the last several years. However, we think it's important enough to take action on.
And how long does this 1.5 milliliter coat last?
The coat itself, meaning how long till the mercury gets through to the top and begins seeping again, is, you know, there's not enough data on that Raleigh, our environmental consultant, was willing to put his name to. You know, he wouldn't guarantee it for any number of years, but it's, you know, reasonable to assume several years, I believe.
But the thing is, Tom, we're going to have to continue to test. So that $6,000 number is going to be there.
Yeah, we'll talk to Raleigh, though, about what's an appropriate amount of testing. Like I said, we started testing every 6 months. Then in a discussion of the board, it was determined, look, it's kind of low. Is this necessary? Let's start testing once a year. And I think this will result in testing, you know, depending on Raleigh's recommendation, he is the, you know, industrial hygienist, so we'll take his recommendation. But, you know, should be less than that.
And where's the money to do this coming from?
It's coming from the current budget where we have, you know, we have experienced some savings, namely in transportation because of COVID. So things like athletic buses not running, private buses not running to some of our private schools for some of our students who are going to private schools for special education. So, you know, we're kind of piecing it together out of, you know, places that we've saved some money this year through COVID.
So when we get the suggestion from our environmentalist, I will come back and let you know exactly what he says, how we should test it, but I would be comfortable testing it more than once a year, and at least in the first year when you put it down.
After you put it down?
Yeah.
I think
it's your decision, not mine. But I want to take two readings, one at the beginning of the year and one in the middle, so so we see exactly where we are, a foot in the floor. But again, we'll talk. See what you think. Let's see what the environmentalist has to say before you make a decision.
You mean the guy we're paying to do the test? Well, really, I mean, really.
Well, yeah, but I don't think he's going to give us information just because he wants to do the test. We've used him right along, and we've used him for other projects in the building as we did our HVAC, as we put the science labs on, and he's always been very focused with me in regards to what we had to do and always giving me suggestions on how we can do it more fiscally minded. So I don't think he's out just looking for a dollar. He's not going to say we have to test 10 times. We went from 111,000 to 37,000 through his guidance and going to several different companies.
Just the added benefit to unrelated to mercury, it will put a new finish on the floor. What you see now, you will not see at all. So we'll restripe it. If you've been over there, there's some paint stains on it. So you know there will be an added benefit to just kind of clean up the room a little bit as well.
I would imagine too that if we are concerned about his opinion in terms of testing, we could always survey other professionals about based upon the levels we're experiencing. How many times do you recommend we test?
Without doubt.
I think it's probably easily addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and even in his initial testing, it was done out of an abundance of caution. You know, you said once a year is probably plenty. We lean on him for that advice. I don't think he would try to pull number.
Okay, anything else about the cafeteria floor?
Nothing about the cafeteria floor unless anyone has any other questions.
Anything else about anything?
Nothing else about anything. Thank you, Dr. Green.
All right. Think about that question, and you did answer it. Now I'd like to move to the superintendent's report and information items, if I may. Oh, thank you. Total enrollment, 1,538 as we speak. High school, 1,002. Elementary school, 536. And since we're talking about total enrollment, I'd like to focus on our total COVID cases from December 1st, 2020 through the present. At the elementary school, we've had 12 students, and these are cited COVID cases, and none related to transfer in school, and six staff. At the high school, we've had 74 students and 10 staff, totals 86 and 16. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay, and I got this information from both schools today. I just felt it was important as we talked about attendance, which I will in a second, that we took a look at our total cases. And again, I reiterate, nothing has been transferred within the school building. It's all been from outside, and these students have been quarantined and would follow the protocols of the Department of Health. From 111 to 115, I'd like to focus on our attendance in the high school first. And I want to look at the total amount of students who are actually present in the building. On 111, it was a blue day, because we know we go blue and gray in a high school, and we basically have about 500 students that we have in each section, 1,002. We tried to break it up evenly. I guess it's really not even. Leslie, in blue and gray days, what is the population?
It's fair. I think it's a difference of like 60 kids on the blue and the gray.
Okay.
Both under 500. Very close, like a little
right.
over five, yeah.
Because one of the questions I keep getting is, you know, according to our,
larger.
In the COVID environment, in the atmosphere we have, the percentage of students who are there, because some parents call me and say, I had two students in my child's class today, Dr. Cajun. How are you keeping school open? And we talk about that. So in a blue day on January 11th, we had 65 absent, and we had 321 totally in school, which in school percentage, which I think is the important point. I could add the out-of-school percentage because some students aren't home, quarantined, and are online, logging into their classes, and some live streaming, taking the classes. I didn't include those. 74% of the students. So on the grade day, on the 12th, again, we had 60 absent, 313 total in school. On a blue day, 73 absent. On the 13th, we had 310 in school. And on the grade day on the 14th, we had 305 in school, and on the 15th, we had 292 in school, which that must have been a Friday. So it goes from 74% to 67%. We average right around 72% of our students in school. If we added the students who are home online, that percentage would go up, but it would be an unrealistic comparison into what I wanted you to see. So I'm convinced that if we can have even 67% of our students here in person, we have to be here. At the elementary school, our attendance, same days, 478, 474, 467, 476, and 482. Our children are coming to school and so are our teachers. So I thought that was an important point if we're talking about attendance to focus on in this COVID environment. Any questions about that at all?
So,
yes, Gene.
If someone who's supposed to be in school and doesn't come that day, can they do virtual for that particular day? Are they choosing to do that, or are they really not going to school?
Well, this is a slippery slope, and this is something I spoke to Rob about. Some students are waking up and deciding they're not coming to school today, but they're going to log on to their class and take what they call a virtual day. Mm-hmm. I never said they could take a virtual day, but I never said they couldn't either, because personally, I'm happy with the fact that the child's home, yet they're logging on to their class to see what's going on. Leslie, if you want to just expound on that, am I wrong in my assumptions? I spoke with Rob about this, and is this happening?
So there were basically two types, students who were aware based on, you know, parent phone calls or information from the nurse's office that are quarantining. Those are the students that are home, and they're attending from home. And then if a student is not feeling well or has a reason to be home, generally what has been happening is essentially, even though that student may be marked absent, they do still have the opportunity to be home and log on. So almost like if a student, you know, used to be absent from school and would get their work and come into school the next day, you know, in the same spot. Essentially, that's what the students are doing. So for any student that is absent for a day or two, they're absent for various reasons. But for students who have let us know specifically that they are going to be home for a longer period of time, in our system, it's logged as attending from home. So that way the teachers know that even though the student isn't in front of them, they are still to be expected to attend from home.
I know those are the ones that are in close contact, but it gets a little confusing. But in high school, we do daily attendance, mm-hmm. and we do class attendance. So say a child's marked absent for daily attendance. However, they're marked present, because I've had some of these cases, for daily class attendance. And I call Rob and say, how could this be? And he had explained to me that that child was absent, but they're very concerned about their chemistry class, and that chemistry teacher live streams, so they've logged on to their chemistry class, so they're marked present there. But they're marked absent in maybe physical education because they're not concerned about that, even though they should be marked absent in all their classes because they attend. So I said, a child can only have 18 absences. We're still following our policies. So I said, you better keep good records, because at the end of the day, when they appeal to these assistant principals, I mean, how are you going to deal with this? And he said to me, we are keeping good records, and we will talk to the students about that. So, I mean, this is a whole new experience for us. And the teachers understand, and my administrators understand. Rick, you want to add in on this at all?
I mean,
from the cheap seats?
Yeah, I mean, from a principal's point of view, like where Rob is, you know, as it comes down to class attendance, it always gets down to a point where, with some students, when it comes down to class attendance, that if they get to a point where they exceed those numbers of absences at the end of the year, they could possibly lose credit. And that number varies for a lot of different reasons from class to class sometimes, and that appeal always goes to the building principal. But again, in like we have now, you know, I know just in talking with Rob and with the assistant principal, you know, with Mr. Reed and Mr. Bramley, you know, it's a different year in the fact that we don't want students to come to school if they're not feeling well, and it's, you know, so we're encouraging them. So that's an important thing to, you know, to understand. And they are taking steps to, you know, to log in and to be a part of, you know, what's going on in the classroom. So it's just a balance that I know, you know, the high school is really doing a great job with.
Common sense and empathy is very important in this COVID environment. And we have to ensure that students are getting the best education they can. So I take no homage to the fact that a child will stay home but get logged into other classes. And my assistant principal, Rich, is here tonight, are doing a great job tracking this. So it's just different. Okay?
Yep.
You see, what else we have? Okay, let's talk about fire drills. December 2nd, December 3rd, we had a fire drill in the high school. December 15th and December 16th, a shelter in place. Our new fire drill system, our fire alarm system, is working extremely well. We've tested it, and it's a great improvement to the one we did have. We can locate exactly the box that's going off. Instead of a zone, we know exactly where it's going off, and we can get to it right away. The alternative school, we fire drill on December 3rd, December 15th, we got a shelter in place. The elementary school, December 15th, tabletop security meeting, and December 18th, the fire drills, where we met the state mandates and requirements for safety and security meetings, as well as fire drills. And one of these days, you're going to meet our new service training dog. Echo will be here, and her training is going extremely well. You can see her search out all the different types of drugs and alcohol that we're testing her for. She doesn't have real drugs, but she does have drugs that simulate this, and she's doing a good job with lockers, especially when students aren't here and in the locker room and out on the fields. So she's going to be a year old soon. We've had her for a while, and she is going to get a certification, I think, in the spring, because she's going through her training well. harassment, intimidation, and bullying. High school, no reports for the month. Elementary school, no reports for the month. And with that, now report from our assistant superintendent of schools, Mr. Place.
Thank you, Dr. Cato.
You're welcome.
First, as a former chemistry teacher, I just want to compliment Dr. Crawley on his thorough mercury explanation. For a math teacher, it was pretty good. So, well done. Tonight marks the beginning of some of the winter sports play. So this year in particular, the streaming of those events has become particularly important. So in that pursuit, we've talked before about the new camera we installed in the gym that's kind of doing some of that automatic streaming of games there. We're also able to take our portable cameras to remote sites as well when that's available. So in fact, currently today, there was a stream of the JV boys scrimmage. The boys varsity scrimmage is going on right now. And simultaneously, we're also streaming the ice hockey game that's going on currently as well. So if you happen to get bored with the meeting, there's a laptop right in front of you. Feel free to jump on our website. We chose to put up one web page that's linked kind of from our app, from the district website, and everywhere. And what that's going to do is keep a running list by date of all the different events and where the link to stream that event is. That's important because we don't obviously control every stream because some of them are at away sites. So this year, most other schools are choosing to stream their games like we are. So we want to make sure our parents can get that link when we're aware of it and when they tell us, right from our website, so it's one place to go. So hopefully you don't have to go searching around to get that information. One note that we did add to that webpage, just so people are aware, and tonight so the board is aware, depending on the services that different schools are using, it's possible that a subscription is required for viewing certain events if that's what the remote school has chosen to do. I don't have a complete list of that, but all of ours are streamed on our YouTube channel for free. Most other schools are doing something similar, but we are aware of a couple of schools where, a subscription might be required. So just so you're aware of that, if anyone asks, obviously when it's not our site, we don't have as much, direct control. So feel free to check it out, and hopefully it works well and lets our parents be as engaged as possible in the athletic events that are taking place. We do plan on doing all levels, so freshman, JV, and varsity this year, since the spectator thing continues to be an issue.
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Coppola, our Director of Curriculum and Instruction. Rick?
Thank you, Dr. Fusion. A couple things, but as Ms. Graziano had mentioned in her report, we're pairing at the elementary school. We've adopted the Ready Math curriculum for grades K to 6 this year, and we're finishing up our first cycle of instruction. And what we're looking at for from February 1st to February 10th is our second round of testing to really trace the students' progress in those classes. So what we're looking to do is as we go through that supporting students from their home, going through the testing and the different diagnostics. So we will have some hard data that we're going to be diving into right in mid-February. And again, we'll be preparing to report out those results to you. We're excited to do so. The other thing, again, in preparation for our equity day on January 19th, where we will have our district staff will be part of discussions with two very dynamic speakers. One of the speakers, Michelle Schiff, has met with all of our subcommittee chair people. As I mentioned at our last meeting, she has reached out virtually to different staff members, administrators, and teachers to kind of do a needs assessment and to really see where we are and their perceptions of what we need to do to make our district better. Dr. Cajun and I met virtually with the chairs of all those committees to talk to them about where they are with the goals that were set forth. A lot of those committees have made a lot of progress and have had very rich discussions. So what will wind up happening will be after the 29th, I know those subcommittees will again come together, continue working on those goals. I know Dr. Cajun addressed all the committees sometime last week, and again, it's a process that we're going through that's gonna be ongoing. And again, we're very excited for the day on January 29th, and that might even take us in a new direction with some of those subcommittees. So that's where we are there. In terms of professional development, we're participating in Ascending District Consortium tomorrow, virtually. As we discussed, we have a lot of curriculum revisions to do that align with the NJ SLA standards, the new standards the state put forth in visual and performing arts, world language and science. So we're coming together with the other Ascending Districts to talk about the process by which we're going to be making those revisions. So that'll be tomorrow. We'll be participating in that. We also have another PD opportunity that I believe Ryan Bassman and Brett Lomas, two of our teachers, will be offering to teachers. Again, those teachers that still need some extra tools in the way of live streaming, that is going to be offered to some of our teachers as well. So we're moving forward in that area. And then, not to steal any of Ms. Kenny's thunder, but we met at the high school to talk about scheduling and course of study for next year. It was a really very rich discussion in terms of what we want to plan for next year. And I think study going back to where we are in terms of the initiative as it pertains to equity and diversity in our district, where we're looking at three courses right now that we're trying to develop and we will develop that we'll offer at the elementary school and the high school for the next school year. And that's all, again, going to be a process that we will involve teachers and administrators in as we move forward. So that's where we are.
Rick, help me out with this. I was just checking my calendar. That's why I had my phone out. We had decided that we were going to set up a meeting with the equity committee, I believe, or was it just the chairs, and the committee from the board who set up the, and to develop exactly what was going to be presented to the board as a whole, as long as it went funneled through the equity committee that the board had set up and diversity committee. What was that date?
I don't have my calendar here either, so I'm not going to get that. I know that meeting with the subcommittee, obviously, before the next board meeting, public board meeting.
Right. And is it the chairs or is it the entire committee? Well, let me say this. Gene, would you like it to be the chairs or the entire committee?
I thought it was going to be the chairs.
Okay, so we'll have the chairs present.
Yeah, and then the board committee.
And Dr. Crowley, what date do you have?
I was looking. February 15th sounds familiar, but I will see
if it does sound familiar. So would February 15th be okay with you at 3 o'clock? Whoever's was on that committee.
What day of the week is that?
Thank you very much for that. Monday.
Monday?
Yeah.
Is that the day we celebrate our presidents?
Oh, that's President's Day. We're actually back. We are in session.
Well, why don't you let me know, Gene, the date in February that you'd like to meet, and I'd like the chairs know.
Martin?
Sure.
What date?
Scheduled for 15th. Well, are we open on the 15th?
We can be. I mean, well,
Yeah, we're back 15th.
We as a school are open on the 15th.
Yes, we're open. So the 15th?
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
So 15th at 3 o'clock, we'll meet, just the chairs, and we'll meet here, and we'll let them know tomorrow. I think that's the date I gave them anyway, and they'll present exactly what they're going to present, what they'd like to present, and plus you talked about all those different classes and curriculums that we're putting together, which leads me to the audit I had discussed earlier. I mean, we can't add more unless we take something away. So that'll be a discussion that we have. So. Good.
It's a good time to meet because, of, you know, as I said, I think the committees have a very clear direction, but I'm confident that they'll have more ideas upon coming out of that January 29th in service.
Right, and they're working hard. I give them a lot of credit. So
Dr. Kazian, those three electives that Mr. Coppola was referring to, mm-hmm. that means there will be three courses that will be eliminated once those are added.
In my mind, yes. I mean, because we take a look at exactly, and this is a question for Leslie. I mean, when you look at the totals and you look at what students sign up for what, unless we mandate a class, like we mandated biology for the freshmen and that set up the schedule, and then we're taking chemistry and gave us a bubble, we needed a chemistry teacher, and now physics. We only have 1,000 students, so something's gotta go if you're gonna put something new into the schedule, unless you have some magic I don't know about.
It winds up being based on the student requests. So each year, even though we do tend to keep the courses listed in our course offerings booklet, you know, to give students that option and then take it from there. So when the counselors are talking to the students about the new courses, we have to kind of gauge it by what their interest leads them towards. And then if we have enough tallies of student requests to run that course, we will run it. So oftentimes, you know, it also can be a little bit more of a revision of a course too. You know, maybe taking a course that was originally a full year and making it a half year or vice versa. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we don't generally just remove the classes. It really is kind of based on, you know, if we're offering a new class, we'll publicize that and see what kind of interest we get.
Sure.
And one of the things that I used, and Rick and I often talked about this during his principalship, was cap of 10. If we have 10 students in the classroom, I'm fine with running that class. If we don't have 10, then Rick would come over to my office and we'd talk about why we needed to run it. And more times than not, I would agree with Rick and we'd run the class. But that brings us to, again, hiring teachers when we have a population that's staying level. Do we want to run classes with 5 or 6 children in it? I don't think that's good either socially, emotionally for them. I think 10 is good. So it's a discussion we will have when that time comes.
We're talking about high school courses?
We're talking about actually some in the elementary school as well.
So that's where I'm confused. So if we're going to introduce recommended courses from the committees,
right,
in the elementary school,
yes,
how do you determine what you're going to eliminate in the elementary school? Isn't everything core there?
I think they become specials. I think they become aimed at the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And I'm speaking when actually Rick, you should be talking about this.
One of the courses that we're looking to offer is we did some articulation with our art teachers on both sides of the street. And one of the things that we want to run as part of the 4th grade rotation across the street is a cultural arts literacy program. So what will happen is, as part of that rotation, there might be something that we would pull out of that rotation, and then we might put that in, you know, in another class, like a media component or something along those lines. So we'll just prioritize what needs to be there. And as the rotations kind of evolve, I mean, time and you know, based on where we are, sometimes those needs change a little bit. So it's not like we're pulling something that is totally going to go away. We might just embed it in another class. And a lot of times in the elementary school, the best place to introduce a course like this would be through one of those rotations.
But on the high school side, what we're looking to do is add 3 electives and then base.
Now, the 3 courses that we're looking at right now is we have 1 course at the high school that we're looking at that's called Diversity in TV and Film. So that's an elective that would be through our TV program. And, you know, we may look, you know, based on past enrollment, we've had a practicum that we used to have.
we're not, the goal isn't to, and maybe I missed something along the way, we're not creating any mandatory programs from this. Everything's going to be on an elective basis.
Yeah, we're starting with elective.
Right. So it's going to be driven by students signing up for said elective.
Student interest, but Tom, I think that's important to understand. Possibly the committee might come out with something that they feel might be a good transition piece for the freshmen to mandate, maybe, and I don't know if they're there yet. They haven't talked to me about this. We haven't had the opportunity. I've met with them according to where they're heading. I know what their goals are. I haven't seen a completion in regards to them fulfilling their goals and saying, this is what we want to bring to the board. I know they would like to have another guidance counselor that brought that to me. And again, it's all dependent on if you're going to get something, something's got to go away. I mean, we're just at that point. So I could see something being mandated for the freshmen coming in, geared to some form of discussion on diversity. I could see that. I don't know what it would look like off the top of my head, but I don't want you to get the wrong impression that we're going to walk away and nothing will be mandated. Something might.
I also don't want to get the impression that we're going to eliminate something and mandate something without having an open discussion about it.
Well, not only an open discussion, but I think we have to get student input to this as well.
Correct.
That's right. The tallies are very important.
Correct. That's what I was asking.
Correct.
But mandate doesn't take into consideration student tallies. Mandate is mandate.
Correct.
Elective is elective.
But I don't know if that... I don't know where we're going because I haven't...
Nor do I. That's why I'm asking.
I haven't gotten the finished product yet. And that's why it's so important that the board give the due diligence of this committee their time and sit down and get to the nuts and bolts and see exactly what they have. And it's a board decision. Then you bring it to the entire board and say, here's what they gave us. What do you want to do with this? And that's where the investigation starts.
I expect this there to be a lot of conversation with the committee and then at board meetings, you know, once this really gets started.
You understand what my concern is?
Yeah.
We talk about and we throw words around like mandate and elective and cancel, and that people start to draw assumptions from that. And that's what I'm trying to steer us away from.
We're a comprehensive high school. I value the fact that we have something for every student who comes here. I think I demonstrate that every Christmas when we show you the things that Woodshop has made. And I'd like to continue doing that and bring more classes for those students who really want to work with their hands. So to that point, we'll never give something up that we see, like something that we've talked about moving away from was a psychology class, as our psychology teacher decided to retire. And it was hard to find another psychology. So we went in and we took a look at the enrollments. And Rick was a great resource because he knew the enrollment for the last 10 years. And we've decided there was just too many students who wanted psychology as an elective and AP psychology. So we just recently hired another psychology teacher to come. But it's based on student interest. Don't ever forget that. So, in collaboration. Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
One last thing. You know, the other piece, too, is we talk about our programs and our curriculum evolving. So, you know, standalone courses and introducing electives is just one facet of that. We're constantly updating when we talk about mandated or required courses. You know, our teachers take a look at you know, what works are being offered in English 1 and English 2. And those discussions that happen and those choices that are made, you know, reflect the needs of students. So that's also another important point to bring out, you know, beyond the, you know, introducing new standalone courses. So.
And teachers periodically go to Rick with their expertise. I know Jim Fagan has done this and say there's a certain class that I really think would be very beneficial for the students to have, either in law or some piece of history. And we look at that, we talk about that, and if we agree with that, then they write a curriculum, it goes to you. You look at the curriculum and you see if you can approve it or not. That has been done in the past. And so that's using the mastery that our teachers have. So, okay, I hope I didn't thoroughly confuse everyone, but that's exactly where we are. Good? Thank you. That ends the superintendent's report for this evening.
Do we have a motion to accept the superintendent's report?
What about Mrs. Kenny? She doesn't get to talk this week.
Yeah, she talked. Did I miss you?
Well, I talked as if I were Rob Goodall.
She was Mr. Goodall. You didn't realize it because she didn't use her Mr. Goodall voice. But she was Mr. Goodall.
Well, you didn't represent well because I considered you Leslie instead of Rob. So I'm going to tell Rob. You didn't represent, but go ahead. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm sorry about that. So just a couple of things, but thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome also.
Just to kind of go back, that actually the conversation that we just had actually kind of, piggybacks off of what I wanted to talk about a little bit about. I did meet with Mr. Capoli yesterday, and we started our whole scheduling process. One of the interesting things about this last year and some of the new teachers that we've hired are that, you know, just like we were talking about with course offerings, you know, a lot of the teachers are coming to us and saying, you know, what about a musical theater class, or what about an additional dance class, and watching the programs kind of grow and evolve, and not so much, you know, cancel a class or change or, you know, take away a class, but have that class evolve. And so that's what we were looking at yesterday. And, you know, some of the new hires that we've got, that we've brought on have been wonderful in saying, you know, I see a real need for, you know, a piano class or different types of opportunities for students. So as we begin the scheduling process, I met with the school counselors today. We are going to have students meet directly with their counselors. We're going to do it a little bit different this year than we have in the past, simply because I want to allow the students a little bit more opportunity of a one-on-one time with their counselors. So I'm going to have the counselors meet with the high school students first to go over the new courses individually, you know, individual meetings, and then have an idea of, you know, what classes they're interested in taking. At that point, then, these students will go home to their families, their parents, discuss that, and the parents will then, acknowledge or, you know, sign off on the courses. We wanted to do it this way a little bit different this year, like I said, so that the teachers, that the students can really spend time with the counselors one-on-one, because they haven't been in school as much, and so we want them to, in their course planning, be, a little bit more specific in their planning for next year, because this year was a little bit unique. Additionally, we are having another articulation meeting tomorrow. Mr. Coppola, Dr. Cajun, and I, with the sending district superintendents. That's going to take place tomorrow. That's the second of our monthly meetings. We are doing virtual parent nights for the eighth grade parents. We'll be posting them soon, where the sending districts can log on at a certain time. We're going to do two separate nights with freshman counselor Ms. Saliski and myself to go over the course offerings, the options for students. We're going to do that, you know, in the next couple of weeks. That will be posted soon. And then as of for next Tuesday, we do have the PSAT scheduled. Again, we did it a little bit different this year. Students in 10th and 11th grade who are interested in taking the exam, we ask for them to sign up. Those students that have signed up gives us an idea of how many people to expect in the building, and to make sure that we are able to socially distance those students. So that test will be taking place next Tuesday for all 10th and 11th graders.
And that meeting, the articulation meeting tomorrow with the sending superintendents, is 3 o'clock, correct?
Yes, it is. 3:30?
3 o'clock. 3 o'clock. Good. It's on my calendar. And I want to thank you for that. And this has been a year when I speak to a lot of parents, and it eventually gets down to either Mrs. Rutter, Mr. Goodall, Mr. Coppola, or Mrs. Kenny in the guidance department. And I just want to thank you guidance people, because they're always ready to reach out and talk to the students, and also talk to parents. And it's so important that this year they have that. So thank you. Thank you all. For the second time, that concludes the superintendent's report. And I'm
can I just point out one thing that you didn't address?
I guess it's not done.
We used to recognize Student of the Month, as you said, and I was looking through the reports, and one thing we haven't pointed out is, you know, I'm an optimist, and I look at all the good things in the report, and there hasn't been one suspension on either side of the street the entire school year. So I think, if anything, in a world gone mad, there hasn't been any suspensions on either side of the street. It's pretty impressive.
And I, Rich, you could correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's a tribute to the students themselves, because the students really want to be here.
They absolutely do, and their willingness to comply with everything that we've asked of them has been just remarkable. What you or the non-compliance you would anticipate from 15 to 17-year-old 1,000 students has just been remarkable, that they've been really on board with everything we're doing, because they really want to be in the building every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Thank you for that. Well, I'm not going to say it, but I think I'm done.
Do we have a motion to approve, accept the superintendent's report? Bissones? Mr. Burns? Mr. Burns?
Mr. Boltman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mrs. Fatale?
Hey, Michelle, can you hear
that?
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Patani?
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Lucretta?
Yes.
Mrs. McGarren?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
Carrie?
Brings us to the Manasquan general items. Does anyone need anything separated out? Items 16 through 21. Does anyone have any questions for items 16 through 21? We have a motion for item 16 through 21. Mr. Balderman, second. Mrs. Pollock?
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Patani?
Yes.
Mr. Lucretta?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
Carrie?
Brings us to the Manasquan Sending District's general items. Does anyone need anything separated out? Items 22 through 29. Any questions, items 22 through 29? We have a motion for items 22 through 29.
Yes.
So, Mr. Lucretta?
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mrs. Fatale?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Patani?
Yes.
Mr. Lucretta?
Yes.
Mrs. McGarren?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollock?
Yes.
Mr. Serena?
Yes.
Carrie?
Brings us to item 30. Does anyone have any old business they'd like to discuss? I just have one quick thing, one quick question. We sent a letter to the governor about being able to had some spectators in the gym. Have we ever gotten any response?
I had no response yet, and I always sent it to the Commissioner of Education. I sent it to NJSIAA. I sent it to the Les Richens, and the only response I got was the NJSIAA, letting me know that they're following the governor's restrictions, and they gave my letter to their lobbyist. I did tell them that if I didn't get any response, that I was going to take it to the Asbury Park Press and put it in the paper, but I really don't want to do that. I would like to get some results from them. Because they did. I think it's our gym's big enough to have two parents for every player on both teams be there, and I will reach out tomorrow to Les Richardson to see where we are with that.
Okay.
I do have some new business.
New business?
Yes. Thank you. I do have some new business this evening, and if you can just indulge me, I'm going to read. This afternoon, members of the board received an email from a Manasquan Elementary School teacher and community member regarding the board's shared service agreement proposal with the borough. The letter contained her opinions on various aspects of the project. It is without question that our teachers, just like any member of the public, have their First Amendment rights, and we welcome their opinions. Beyond the expressed opinions, however, this letter contained several falsehoods and misrepresentations that could cause alarm or undue concern about student safety and the quality of instruction in our district. Therefore, I felt it necessary to address several of those items in public tonight. One, the letter states mercury is leaking from a crack in the elementary cafetorium floor. As you heard from Dr. Crowley earlier this evening, the levels of mercury in the cafetorium are not related to the crack, but rather to an ingredient in the flooring that has resulted in a slightly elevated mercury reading in the room, still 10 to 100 times less than what is deemed to be a safe level by the New Jersey Department of Health. Additionally, as mentioned at the last board meeting, the district has already committed to use its operating budget to bring that level even lower. Two. The letter makes several references to extracurricular programs that were, quote, canceled due to lack of funds. This is not the case. It appears as though these are references to prior programs that were funded through short-term grants. In any case, grant or otherwise, the district routinely makes decisions on the priorities of what programs we run. The letter suggests that making the decision to reallocate funds to different extracurricular programs in prior years is somehow related to a proposed future project. This, of course, is illogical and false. Three, most upsetting to me, however, was the statement that, quote, Latino students in Manasquan schools are treated unfairly when it comes to equality in technology and services. The simple facts are, all students of the district are given equal access to technology, and over the past, we have gone above and beyond to meet the needs of any families who need access. In fact, I recall last March and April, at the beginning of our school closure, our technology staff worked several weekends in order to provide laptops and wireless hotspots to any child that had a need, including many who the teacher herself identified. Additionally, the ELL department has been planning for several weeks how to leverage grant money to provide additional access to devices for our ELL population. As the superintendent of the district, I have always welcomed the opinions and perspectives of all our employees. I have an open door policy and will meet with anyone who wants to talk to me. Many employees have taken advantage of this over my years here. It's truly disappointing that was not the case here, and instead, these misrepresentations are being used publicly to support an individual's opinion on an unrelated construction project. I know you all received that letter through email, and I wanted to correct it with facts. And those are the facts that we have. Remember, you have to follow the facts. That brings you to a true conclusion. That's all I have for new business.
Thank you. Anyone else have any new business? That will bring us to our executive session. Where is the Senator Byron M. Baer, Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, the Act, provides that the Manasquan Board of Education hold an executive session from which the public is excluded to discuss matters that are confidential or one of nine subject matters listed in Section B of the Act. And whereas it is recommended by the Superintendent that the Manasquan Board of Education go into executive session on this stage in Manasquan, New Jersey, to discuss matters that are permissible for discussion in the executive session, and whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 30 minutes, after which the public meeting of the board shall reconvene and proceed with business, and whereas the board hereby declares that its discussion of the following subjects will be made public at a time when the public's interest in disclosure is greater than any privacy governmental interest being protected from disclosure. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Manasquan Board of Education that the board shall go into the executive session to discuss the following items. We'll be discussing personnel matters, hiring, resignations, and leave of absence. Items discussed in an executive session will result in board action when the board reconvenes to public session. Do we have a motion to go into executive session?
Yes.
Mr. Burns, second Mr. Serino. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Mr. Serena, Mr. Byrne, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Roll call, Sandy.
Mr. Haldeman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bassam?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mrs. Batayas?
Here.
Thank you.
Mr. Batani?
Here.
Mr. Hovener? Mr. Angolia? Mr. Lucretta?
Here.
Mrs. McGarren?
Here.
Here.
Mrs. Pollock?
Here.
Mr. Serena?
Here.
Warren?
Do we have a motion for the Manasquan personnel, items 33? Mrs. Pollock? Mr. Boulderman?
Mr. Boulderman?
Yes.
Mr. Vaughn.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Patana.
Yes.
Mr. Lucretta.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mrs. Pollak.
Yes.
Mr. Serena.
Yes.
Gary.
Brings us to the Manasquan Sending District's personnel. Do we have a motion for item 34? Mr. Lucretta. Mr. McGarry.
Yes. Mr. Boldman.
Yes.
Mrs. Passone.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mrs. Pataia.
Michelle.
Sorry, can you hear me? Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Patana.
Yes.
Mr. Lucretta.
Yes.
Mrs. McGarry.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mrs. Pollak.
Yes.
Mr. Serena.
Yes.
Gary.
I apologize.
Could
we, yeah, could we just add that Eggy motion to the high school personnel document verbally?
What? There was
the motion that should be on the high school personnel document.
Yeah, one of the teachers I spoke about should have been on the high school document, not the elementary school. So just reference that verbally. It's Carly and Eggy is a high school English teacher, not an elementary school teacher. She should be blue and not yellow. So let's just make it blue.
The guide adjustment resolution.
And the guidance office too as well?
Guide adjustment.
The guide adjustment resolution should be on the high school personnel. That was the error.
So just make that verbal.
Can we re-vote as amended? Gene?
Because they voted without being amended.
Yeah, so we got to vote again.
Yeah.
Okay.
As amended.
Which one? On the high school?
The high school resolution as amended.
So we're re-voting on the high school.
We'll have to re-vote on both. We removed her from the elementary and put her on the high school.
So. Okay. All right. Do we have a motion for item 33, Manasquan personnel?
Yes.
Mr. Serena.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Thank you.
Mr. Boldman.
Yes.
Mrs. Passone.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Patana.
Yes.
Mr. Lucretta.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Gary?
We have a motion for item 34 to Manasquan Sending District's personnel. Mr. Boldman? Mrs. Passone?
Mr. Boldman?
Yes.
Mrs. Passone?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mrs. Pataia?
Yes.
Mr. Patana?
Yes.
Mr. Lucretta?
Yes.
Mrs. McGarry?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mrs. Pollack?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Gary?
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Serino, Mr. Lucretta, all in favor?
Aye.